Good morning, everyone. I'd like to convene this last meeting of the session for the Labor and Consumer Protection Division. Want to thank everyone for who is here for being here. Yeah. So, Mr. Minnick, how are you doing this morning?
We're fine.
We're fine. Excellent. I know some members are...
I have to run him down, so he's not going to ask me.
No, I'm not. A little close with the pickup truck this morning. I'm hopeful, I'm optimistic, let's put it that way, that we will get a quorum this morning. I do know that some members, after being here until 1:30 this morning, may come staggering in a little bit later. So my apologies, but Representative Lanning has an interesting proposal here. We do want to hear it and hear, most importantly, from the real civilians who you have brought forward to be with us today. Given that we do not have a quorum and given that we are after deadlines, as you know, Representative Lanning, I'd like to move House File 2062 to be before the committee, but we are not able to take formal action on it today. Representative Lanning, to your bill, and I see that you have a delete all amendment to focus members' attention.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and good morning, I think. After a late night, I think you all should get gold stars for being here early this morning. But House File 2062 is put together in response to the recommendations from the Commission on Poverty. Back in 2006, we in the legislature passed a bill that established the Commission to End Poverty in Minnesota by the year 2020. A very ambitious goal. States all across the country have been setting priorities like that, goals to reduce poverty. We're one of the very few that set an even higher goal of ending poverty by 2020. In the summer of 2007, we began work as a commission. The commission is composed of, was composed of nine members of the House, nine members of the Senate, and two gubernatorial appointees. And the commission spent the rest of 2007, all of 2008, preparing a report and a series of recommendations. And I don't have copies. I think at some point all of you should have received a copy of this this report.
Representative Lanning, members have photocopies of the report in our
okay.
packet.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, and to do its work, the commission set up really three work groups because we realized that there was going to be a lot of work, a lot of ground to cover, and so we set up three work groups. One that was to be focused on the goal of achieving economic self-sufficiency, and that. Group spent a lot of time dealing with things like early childhood education, improving graduation rates, and the like. The second group, a group that I chaired, was charged with coming up with recommendations to build financial and developmental assets to help people move or work their way out of poverty. And the third group was charged with setting up bringing forward recommendations to remove barriers. We all can identify barriers that there are for people and their ability to move out of poverty. And so we had those three main work groups. I chaired the one on assets, as you note, which is probably a reason why I was a likely choice to be bringing forward this bill, because the bill 2062 really focuses on the whole issue of building assets. Let me just point out a few things with regard to the bill, and then I'm going to turn it over to the real experts here, the folks that have worked closely with the commission over our history, and the people who can share their thoughts and observations about this. Let me explain the delete all, if I might. This came about because there is a similar effort underway in the Senate. Senator Jungbauer, a fellow member of the commission, is carrying this bill in the Senate. The Senate has some very particular expectations in terms of what you need to do in order to set up work groups or task forces and all of that, which is a good thing. We in the House probably could learn a lesson from that. And so Senate counsel provided some recommendations to clarify and help us more closely follow with Senate guidelines. And then I added another twist to this that I haven't had a chance yet to talk with Senator Jungbauer about, but I will. And looking further at this, originally the bill called for a task force of 24 members. I thought that got to be a large group, and so what we decided to then it had the total of four legislators, two from the House and two from the Senate. Following the model of the commission and the work that we did in the work group, I felt it would be better to have more legislators involved on, with this delete all amendment, recommending that there be four members of the House, two from each side of the aisle, four members from the Senate, again, two from each side of the aisle. And that then we continue to have, as the original draft had, someone representing Commerce and someone representing the Attorney General. And then when you look at the original bill and all of the different groups that were to be members or a part of this, it became very clear it was going to be real difficult to determine who finally decided, was going to decide just who should represent that particular interest area. And so instead, what this bill now does is to say that all of the folks that are listed there are invited to be at the table talking with the legislators, working with the legislators on these issues going forward. But since the ultimate goal here is for the task force to, as you'll see in the bottom of page one of the Delete All Amendments, the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force is established to assist the legislature to identify specific actions and policies to assist Minnesotans to escape or avoid poverty through the accumulation and maintenance of assets. And by January 15th of 2010, less than a year from now, the task force is charged with coming up with recommendations and draft legislation to help achieve those objectives. I think folks that are here that experience working with our work group can attest to the fact that this process worked very well and in terms of how our work group moved forward. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that's just a very brief overview of what you have before you, and now I think Mr. Ron Elwood and some others would like to share their comments.
Thank you, Representative Lanning. Mr. Elwood, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. First of all, I really want to sincerely thank Representative Lanning and Senator Jungbauer for bringing this bill forward. I was pleased to participate on his work group in the Poverty Commission, and I certainly can attest that it worked well. I think the recommendations came out of the Poverty Commission's report from Representative Lanning's group were sound and obviously, in some cases, readily implementable, as this bill attests. I think another model we can look to that's very similar was the foreclosure working groups that took place a couple of years ago that resulted in a slew of legislation last session, and it was all non-controversial, bipartisan. Stakeholders from many, many, many different perspectives came together around a common interest, and I think that's the model we want to achieve here. The vision of this bill that Representative Lanning has laid out implements, I think, the most important pieces of the Building Assets Working Group, and the vision is through a collaborative effort among all sectors, private, nonprofit, philanthropic, the public sector, of course, the heavily involvement from legislators and executive branch agencies and personnel. So through this kind of a collaborative effort, with different perspectives but with a common interest, is to move these recommendations forward. And I think we here have the opportunity, a unique one, to create a national model to get beyond some of these problems and the risks that take place around some of these predatory lending products, where one side says they're predatory, they should be banned. The other side says no, they're very important. They're the only, you know, the only opportunities for some people to get this form of credit. And in some cases, both sides are right, but neither response is really in the best interest of the people using these products, the state, and in fact, the nation. So we can, I think, this has an opportunity to create a third way. There are seeds already being planted, and you're going to hear from others today who will show you that it's possible to bring together people from different sectors to do something different and lift people out of poverty and avoid the erosion of their assets through predatory practices. So there's been a lot of excitement generated by this. And if we can move forward, I certainly hope that Representative Lanning's vision for the active participation of many legislators, and perhaps you, Mr. Chair, as well, and anybody else would be welcome, we can really do something exciting and unique in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have four panels, which is quite the task. So I do welcome all of the participants. I just would ask that folks be brief and focused in their remarks. The first panel, Mr. Rushi from Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, Ms. Brennigan from the Office of the Economic Status of Women, and Ms. Fitzsimmons from the Minnesota Catholic Conference. And I'll let you folks sort yourselves out and introduce yourself before you speak. Welcome, Mr. Rushi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning. And I guess we'll go in the order that you stated. Brian Rushi with the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, representing the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the Jewish Community Relations Council, and the Islamic Center of Minnesota. We were one of the organizations deeply involved in the formation and the funding and the work of the Minnesota Commission to End Poverty in Minnesota by 2020. And I'd just like to go back into the proceedings of the Commission's work a little bit further back than Representative Lanning or Mr. Elwood described, to say that one of the first things that the Commission did was got around the state and listen to people experiencing poverty. They did a really good job, one of the best jobs of citizen engagement that I've ever seen, of really listening to people and understanding the barriers and the conditions and the suggestions that people have. And over and over and over, people lifted up this idea that the difference between experiencing a bump in the road, a tough life event, whether that's illness or loss of a job or loss of a wage earner in the household or disability, whatever, the difference between that bad event landing somebody into a poverty spell or not was whether or not they had assets. Financial and social assets. Those are the things that help most people get over a bump in the road. But if you don't have them, it causes a poverty spell. And that can be protracted. And in many cases, expensive for the public sector if we don't have strategic ways of getting people back on their feet quickly. So I just want to give that as context. It's a huge difference between whether or not people land in poverty or not. So when the Poverty Commission began to organize its thinking about what are the most important strategies that we can embark on to end poverty in the state, I think the top three are, one, making work pay, and there's a whole section in the report that covers how do we restore work as the primary means out of poverty. The second one is how do we refocus our public assistance programs and streamline them to make them more effective and more useful to families. And then the third one, and this is what this bill is all about, is how do we help people and families maintain and build both financial and social assets. So that's the background of why we think this is so important. It's central to this goal that we have to end poverty by 2020. Let me just finish by saying that I think the construction of the bill is hopeful and workable because I think of the tone and the working relationships that have been formed during the work of the commission and in this section of the bill where it talks about members of the community having the opportunity to meet with and present views to the task force. I'm heartened by that. I think that'll work, and I think, you know, we're good at that, and we'll make it happen. So
thank you. Thanks, Mr. Rushi. Ms. Brennigan, hope I got that right.
You did. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. My name is Amy Brennigan with the Office on the Economic Status of Women, and I too want to thank Representative Lanning for bringing this forward. Our office had the opportunity to travel with the commission on their listening tours across the state, and we certainly saw a lot of meaningful testifiers, many of whom were women. And I think we saw a lot of hope too when we were introduced to some of these asset development models. And we're thrilled about the opportunity to participate and help with this Ladders Out of Poverty Task Force. So I just want to speak a couple of moments about two things, about predatory lending and its impact on women, and then about the success of asset development initiatives with women. For the last year, our office has participated in a project called the Elder Economic Security Initiative, and our attraction to that was that it really had a focus on elder Minnesotans, and we know that many of the poorest elder Minnesotans are women. And in fact, our work in this group showed us that even those with retirement incomes that include personal retirement accounts, private savings, and pensions may fall short of economic security, and that this problem is most severe for single elder women. Predatory lending and subprime loans truly prey on many of these single elder women. So let me share some statistics with you. HUD reports that the harms of predatory lending, and this isn't a surprise I'm sure to many of you, fall disproportionately on those groups that are overrepresented in the subprime mortgage market: minorities, single women, the poorly educated, and the elderly. In addition to this, the Consumer Federation of America states that women are more likely to receive subprime mortgages than men of the same race, and women of color are much more likely to receive subprime mortgages than white men. For purchase mortgages, African-American women were 5.7% more likely than African-American men to receive subprime mortgages. Latino women were 12.7% more likely than Latino men to receive subprime mortgages. And white women were 25.8% more likely to receive subprime mortgages than white men. African-American women were 256.1% more likely to receive subprime purchase mortgages than white men, and Latino women, 177.4%. So there are several reasons why these disparities exist, and one of the nice parts about this bill is that we get to study and discuss these reasons here at the legislature and start taking some action legislatively where it's appropriate to address these issues. In terms of women in lending and why women are more susceptible or may be more susceptible, the CEFA points to three reasons. First, that women-headed households generally have lower incomes to make their mortgage payments and lower wealth to make down payments on a home. Secondly, women have faced historical disparity at the loan window with higher rejection rates than men, and this is a spillover from that reality. Third, women are generally uncertain about the level of their financial knowledge and education. I think that that's changing, and this bill provides a provision to discuss financial education and financial literacy, and that is crucial to women's financial success and their economic security, to learn at an early age about financial realities. So despite some of those less hopeful signs and areas of concern, I think asset development is a bright light for all low-income people in our state, and particularly for women. I'm going to just briefly talk about three asset development initiatives that have started here at the legislature. One of them you'll hear a lot about in the subsequent testifiers is the FAME program, our statewide IDA program. 78% of those FAME account holders are women. And anecdotally, they're showing great success in being able to obtain their assets. Another bill that was introduced this session that some of you may have heard about was the Lifelong Learning Accounts Bill. And this is a matched asset development account for low-income workers. And low-income workers can save, and their employer matches. And part of the bill that we've explored is having a state match as well, so that these low-income workers in targeted industries can save for additional training within their industries. And in pilot programs across the country, 56% of those programs were, and those accounts were held by women. Finally, another bill that was introduced, also inspired by the work of the Poverty Commission, was the Child Savings Account Bill. This was introduced in early childhood. This is also known as a baby bond bill, and the way it was discussed was that upon the birth of a child, a low-income family would receive $750 from the state, $250 contribution from the family, and that $1,000 would be the beginning of a savings account for higher education. So that also received an informational hearing, and there's what's wonderful about these asset development accounts is they have so much support from such a wide base of folks here at the legislature and outside of the community, as you're seeing here today. In that pilot program, that was going to be piloted through Head Start initiatives, and over half of those Head Start families are single head of household. And we don't know the gender breakdown for that, but we're assuming a high percentage of those families are female. And finally, I always like to relate the potential and power of low-income people, and especially low-income women, and their ability to save and invest to the Grameen banking model. Many of you know this international micro-lending model introduced by Muhammad Yunus in Bangladesh in 1976. He won the Nobel Prize in 2006, I believe. And he began this bank by loaning a small group of poor women $27 so that they could create small items for sale without the burdens of predatory lending. Grameen Bank now serves 6 million borrowers, 96% of them who are women. The number of borrowers will reach 8 million by the end of this year and 12 million by 2010. So again, I reiterate the importance of this task force to both study the issues and to look at potential positive solutions to eradicate poverty in our state. And thank you so much for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you very much. Ms. Fitzsimmons, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself. Off for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Alexandra Fitzsimmons, and I'm the Policy Director for the Minnesota Catholic Conference. The Minnesota Catholic Conference is the public policy voice of the Catholic Church throughout Minnesota and represents the dioceses of Crookston, Duluth, St. Cloud, New Ulm, Winona, and the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis. And I want to thank you so much for hearing the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force bill. As many members of this committee know, this is a bill that we are very excited about and that you've already heard excitement from all of your testifiers thus far. So thank you very much. We're very excited about this bill and its potential for achieving one of the three primary objectives of the Legislative Commission to End Poverty in Minnesota by 2020, building individual and community assets. This, in turn, will help us move closer to ending poverty in our state over the next several years. More than 9% of our neighbors throughout Minnesota are living in poverty, 482,000. To be living below the poverty line, an individual must be living on less than $10,830 a year, or a family of four must be living on less than $22,050 a year. With our state's budget deficit and our growing rate of unemployment, the number of us living without basic needs is likely to increase. Now is not the time to set aside the work of the Legislative Commission to End Poverty and its long-term visionary plan of ending poverty in Minnesota. Now is the time to cultivate the ingenuity that will help Minnesotans become more financially self-sufficient, protect their resources from predatory lending practices, build and maintain financial assets, and gain greater financial literacy. Learning to build and maintain assets is a critical component in helping our neighbors ascend the ladder out of poverty. While having a job is a necessary component of financial security, a job alone is not enough. Financial education fosters financial stability for individuals, families, and entire communities. The more people know about credit and banking services, the more likely they are to increase savings and improve their financial health and well-being. People must also have access to credit and banking products that provide opportunities for building and maintaining assets. And this is a social justice issue. The Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force bill will bring together individuals from the public, private, nonprofit, and philanthropic sectors to discuss and recommend asset building best practices. This bill also offers a unique opportunity for Minnesotans from various sectors to come together and practice the virtue of solidarity. In order to lighten the loads of our many neighbors who are in economic need, we must work together. The Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force bill invests in human dignity, strengthens families, and moves us closer to ending poverty in our state. Thank you for your time, your leadership, and your courage.
Thank you very much. Ms. Fitzsimmons, our next panel, ladies and gentlemen, is Pam Johnson with the Minnesota Community Action Partnership. Ms. Schaff, a FAME coordinator, and Ms. Jones, a FAME participant. If you could please come down. And again, you may have picked up on the drill. If you'd introduce yourselves for the tape, speak briefly out of respect for everyone's time, that would be welcome.
Mr. Chairman Dabney and committee members, my name is Pam Johnson with the Minnesota Community Action Partnership, our state's 28-member anti-poverty network serving all 87 counties of Minnesota. Our statewide members worked alongside countless other groups and leaders, many of whom are in the room today, to help plan and host the commission's listening tour, which engaged hundreds of local citizens and leaders in describing the diverse experiences of poverty in urban, rural, and suburban communities throughout the state. We're thrilled that Representative Lanning has introduced this bill and that the committee is taking time to hear it today to keep the work of the commission going. For over 40 years, Community Action has led locally led determined strategies for ending poverty that evolve as times change. In addition to a broad range of safety net services that are well known, heating assistance, weatherization, employment help, transportation, housing, senior services, Head Start, you have actually a packet that lists the agencies and then the services that Community Action provides by agency, and then a map that shows where the tech agencies are.
We do that.
In a broad range, in addition to these services, Community Action has ventured into assisting low-income households to gain financial education, free tax preparation help, and long-term financial assets through our individual development account program called FAME, which Amy Brunigan just mentioned. That's the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota program. FAME is delivered collaboratively through 23 community action agencies, Women Venture, City, County, Federal Credit Union, Emerge Community Development in North Minneapolis, Leech Lake and Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Tribes, and the Greater Twin Cities United Way. Funding for FAME comes through public-private partnerships at the federal, state, and local levels. Kim Schaff is here from Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties here in St. Paul to talk a little bit more about the impact of FAME and financial education, which are discussed in the bill. Unfortunately, we're hoping Rhonda will still show up. She got locked out of her car. She's on her way. But Kim can also read a piece about her as well. Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Schaff.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak on House File 2062, Establishing the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force. My name is Kim Schaff, and I am the FAME Program Coordinator at Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties. Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties serves approximately 17,000 households annually through weatherization, Head Start, energy assistance, and self-sufficiency programming. FAME is one component of Community Action's self-sufficiency programming. Currently, we are allotted 55 FAME spots and are fully enrolled with a waiting list of about 95 eligible residents. FAME is a match savings program that helps low-income wage earners acquire assets either through first-time home ownership, small business, startup or development, and post-secondary education. Account holders receive a 3-to-1 match on their earned income. Therefore, for every dollar they save, FAME matches that with $3. FAME's success in helping people move towards greater economic stability while saving for an asset is in large part due to financial education classes as well as one-to-one coaching participants receive. This is where they learn to save, address and reduce debt, understand the importance of fixing and protecting their credit, as well as becoming conscious consumers. All self-sufficiency participants are required to attend financial education classes called the Four Cornerstones of Financial Literacy. The four cornerstones are budgeting to create savings, debt reduction and asset building, building a good credit score, and consumer protection in financial institutions. FAME coaching is aimed at helping participants address their financial barriers, therefore what's holding them back from lifting themselves out of poverty. Each participant may have different economic empowerment goals while in FAME, or maybe even several. My participants currently have goals such as beginning to address paying off old debt, creating a budget to reduce excess spending, to start saving, or cleaning up their credit. Currently, and moving forward, as far as each asset, education, in most cases, we are helping people who have financial aid, but financial aid that doesn't cover the whole cost of their education, as far as tuition, books, or maybe even computers. The cost that FAME picks up helps to save out-of-pocket expenses, thus allowing the student to continue with school without incurring further debt. Home ownership. If people are interested in purchasing a home, they must be committed to assuring that their debt is reduced and their credit is good. Some participants also must be committed to increasing their income. As far as small business, in most cases, we're helping people sustain an existing business. For instance, currently we're helping a couple who have an in-home daycare update their house so that it's safe and healthy for the children that they're serving. It doesn't look like Rhonda's here yet, so I will share a little bit about her story. Her name is Rhonda Jones, and she's utilized community actions resources such as Head Start, Energy Assistance, and most currently the FAME program. Rhonda first heard about FAME while she was taking financial literacy classes. She's a single mom that first came to FAME in August of 2007 with dreams of owning her own home. Her credit needed some work, and she had some old debt that she needed to take care of. We began working on creating a budget and addressing her old debt. Meanwhile, Rhonda applied for a Habitat for Humanity home in March of 2008, and by June of 2008, Rhonda found out that she had been matched with a Habitat home. Rhonda kept working on paying off old debt and repairing her credit card, her credit, with the goal of being debt-free by the time that she moved into her new home. I'm happy to say that Rhonda will be moving into her new house at the end of June 2009. She said that she's paying her last $600 that she owes on her car as of today and will only have $1,000 in student loans from being debt-free, and she says she is going to have that paid off by the time she gets into her home. Rhonda has expressed that she's learned a lot from financial literacy classes and was thankful for the help she received in understanding her credit and also repairing it. She was also thankful for the match money that is going to help pay for the down payment of her new home. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Our next panel, Eva Song-Margolis from Accountability Minnesota, Joyce Cotton also with Accountability Minnesota, Justin Bell from APAC, and Ms. Humphrey from the Minnesota Credit Union Network. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eva Saw-Margolis, and I am the Financial Services Partnership Manager with Accountability Minnesota. We are a community-based nonprofit, and we provide free tax assistance and related financial services to low-income Minnesotans. Last year, we served about 18,000 individuals and families, and we returned $26 million in refunds to Minnesotans. And I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to be testified today. I'm very supportive of the bill to establish the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force, as it affects not only the customers that we serve at Accountability Minnesota, but the community in which I was raised, and really all Minnesotans, as we're all linked together, regardless of our income. In the last 4 years, Accountability Minnesota has developed an alternative to one of the most egregious forms of predatory lending, which are refund anticipation loans. Annually, these loans drain about $20 million from Minnesotans. Yet through a partnership with local credit unions, banks, the McKnight Foundation, and the Annie E. Casey Foundation, we have been able to approve over 1,500 alternative refund anticipation loans in the last 4 years, saving customers almost $500,000 in what they would have paid had they gone elsewhere. Moreover, we have opened up over 1,800 credit union and bank savings accounts for our customers, providing people an access to mainstream financial institutions. This has really been important, as over a third of all participants were unbanked prior to accessing the service. I just wanted to highlight that the services has really been wonderful in three parts. First of all, it's diverted Minnesotans from using predatory products. It's gotten them a similar financial service that they needed at a fair rate, and perhaps most importantly, it's got them access to create assets and to build wealth. I believe the Accountability Minnesota model is proof that a private, nonprofit, philanthropic partnership works and that this bill could start a process to take it to a whole other level. I really believe that low-income Minnesotans especially should be able to get financial services that they need at a fair rate, and moreover, they should be able to get access to products that help them build wealth, just as Minnesotans with perhaps more means or wealthy Minnesotans are able to do. I just want to leave you quickly with a few facts that I think perhaps summarize the program. In that a year after the start of the tax season, over 80% of all of the savings accounts with credit unions and our bank partners have remained open. Additionally, we know anecdotally that 4 years after the start of this program, many customers are keeping their accounts open and have gone on to utilize other financial services such as opening up a checking account, opening up CDs, and other personal loans. Ms. Cotton, who's sitting with me, is a participant that can speak further to that. So thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Ms. Cotton, welcome to the committee. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is George Cotton, and I'm one of many participants that have utilized the services of Accountability. Now, before going to Accountability, I had went to other tax preparers and was charged hundreds of dollars even before I had received my refund back. But, and I didn't know what to expect going to Accountability, but once I was there, I took advantage of the free services as well as my tax preparer and was able to rapid my refund and got it back in less time than I was able to get it back at the other agencies. And it also gave me an opportunity to open up an account at the credit union, which allowed me to have a checking and savings account, which I'm still utilizing that account today. So being one of the participants, I see the advantage that it had helped me and my children actually save my income as far as receiving my full refund and not having to pay out a hefty amount of it just to get my taxes prepared, and taking that and being able to save what I was able to pay out before I could save it in my savings account at a credit union. So I am very much appreciative of the opportunity that was allowed me at Accountability to actually utilize the credit union and all the opportunities there and grant me a checking and savings account that actually paid me interest on my money. So thank you for allowing me to speak to you today.
Thank you, Ms. Cotton. Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Justin Bell, and I'm the Legal and Policy Director for All Parks Alliance for Change. We represent manufactured homeowners and residents of manufactured home park communities throughout the state of Minnesota. The people that live in manufactured housing sustain themselves on usually between 30 and 50% of area median income. Their inability to build assets puts them in a precarious position for predatory lending practices, and puts them in a vulnerable position of losing their homes. Every year we see more and more people go from being homeowners to homeless in Minnesota. The goals of this task force is to grow the capacity to help people build assets and improve their financial literacy and find alternatives to predatory products, which substantially help the people that we represent through Minnesota. 50,000 households and almost 180,000 Minnesotans live in manufactured homes throughout the state of Minnesota and are trying to be self-sufficient and are living predominantly free of any government subsidy at all. So we thank you for allowing me to speak here today, and thank you for considering the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Bell. Ms. Humphrey, I think there was just a commercial for credit union membership from Ms. Cotton.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, members, Mara Humphrey, I'm the Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Credit Union Network, represent the state's 159 credit unions. And just wanted to make a couple of comments. Appreciate Representative Lanning's carrying this issue, addressing the issue. We appreciate the work that the commission has done, the Commission to End Poverty. A couple of things that we're excited about that they're looking at is putting the ropes on some of the predatory lending practices that we've been seeing, and also addressing financial literacy. And financial literacy is something that credit unions feel is very important. We have several outside partnerships that we've been working on to try to advance financial literacy and make sure that we can get that in front of people. So we really do support that piece of what the task force will be looking at. And just wanted to second a couple of the public-private partnerships that credit unions have found to be very successful. We do appreciate working with Accountability Minnesota. I think that's been a very successful way to provide alternatives to refund anticipation loans and also to provide a way to get some of the unbanked into a financial institution. Another program that credit unions participate with is Get Checking. It helps get participants into a financial institution, setting them up with a savings and a checking account. We also partner with several private organizations. We do a lot of work with Lutheran Social Services on credit counseling, and also offer some alternatives to payday lending among a number of the various products that different credit unions offer. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Humphrey. Excuse me. Ms. Jones was able to get into her car. And I do want, since you made the extra effort to get here this morning, I did want to give you the opportunity to come forward and provide the committee with your testimony. While you are coming forward, please do so. At a parliamentary moment, we do now have a quorum, so I would like to formally convene the committee. Thank you. Ms. Jones, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
If you could please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
My name is Rhonda Jones. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the community for the opportunity to share my experiences with the Community Action FAME program. My name is Rhonda Jones, once again. I'm a divorced single mom. I have a 13-year-old daughter. I'm a former Head Start parent, and I also have several... I've been in several programs with the community action programs, such as like energy assistance, and I'm currently employed full-time with Virtual Radiologic, which is a teleradiology company. Home ownership is something that it's always been a lifelong dream for me. I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here.
That's okay.
I apologize. While I was in the process of applying for ways to work, in which I was actually denied that, when I was in the process of going through their financial and credit classes, I actually learned of the FAME program. It allowed me to... the financial classes and the credit classes were very, very beneficial to me. I learned how to clean up my credit, the value of my credit, and maintaining good credit, and also budgeting. And it was through those classes that I learned, it was through that I learned of the FAME program, which I thought would be a perfect opportunity. I'm losing my train of thought here. Okay. I thought it would be a perfect opportunity to have a dream come true, have a dream actually become a reality. So I got enrolled into the FAME program. After waiting a few months, they had to wait until their funds got available. And then finally, I met with Kim here, who's my counselor, mentor. and she was able to, pull my credit, go over all my bills and my monthly expenses. We developed an action plan, short and long term goals. I went to work. I'm getting it done. During that process of me cleaning up my credit, I was actually and maintaining everything that I had currently at that time also. I applied for Habitat for Humanity. And in May of 2008, I was actually approved and accepted. So right now I've completed all of my requirements with FAME along with my mandatory classes at Habitat. and along with my 300 hours of sweat equity that I just finished as of Tuesday. It's a lot harder than you think. So I will be moving into my brand new townhome at the Dale Street Townhomes within about 2 months. My dedication is on the 18th of June, and the tentative date for closing is June 30th. I still need to get more information on that. As of today, I have finished paying off my car note. I have $1,200 more on my student loan, and I plan to be absolutely debt-free when I move into my house, with the exception of my mortgage and my utilities, of course. You know, and also thanks to the FAME program, you know, with that, me saving my own money and then also with them matching it, I'm able to put down $4,000 when I go to close on my house. And once again, you know, with Habitat, it's interest-free. You know, the mortgage is basically the cost of what they acquired to build it, and then our mortgage will actually not exceed any more than 30% of our income, our yearly income. So with that, you know, there's no way I can fail. So and just with the economy the way that it is, I just knew that that was going to be the most successful way for me to go. So with that, I'm very proud of my own achievements. And I guess that, and you know, it's going to provide much stability for myself and my daughter, place to call home. We're living with Dad right now, which I love him to death, but, you know, we need our space.
yeah. But, who can't understand that?
I think, honestly, that more people need to know about each of the programs, because out of my whole selection group, there was only two of us, and I think because there is maybe a barrier, you know, a lot of the Habitat for Humanity, they're not from the U.S. So, and I think the only two, there's another person that also had the same type of program, but with a different association. But we were both American born, and we were the only two that actually knew about these type of programs. So, I think a lot of other people could benefit, and it's something that I would like to continue and. I'm definitely an advocate, and I tell everybody I know.
Marvelous. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Jones, I just received a note that you're one of my constituents, so welcome to the neighborhood. It's a compelling story. And I'm grateful and glad for your success.
Thank you.
If you could just take a quick moment to tell how this affects your 13-year-old daughter and the repairing and the recovery and the vision you have for your life and how you think that might affect your daughter and how these programs have helped you do that.
Ms. Jones.
Well, truly, it's been a great sacrifice. We have sacrificed much. You know, right now, just being totally honest and real, you know, my dad lives in a two-bedroom. My daughter and I share a bed. So, and I mean, and it's, you know, I don't live that kind of lifestyle. I mean, it's perfectly fine, but, you know, we need our space, and it's not what we're used to, but it's something that I had to do. You know, my dad has allowed me to live rent-free for quite some time, and it allowed me to do what I needed to do in order to achieve this goal. So she does understand that, and she is going to very much appreciate when we are able to move and be in our own home.
Anything else, Representative Mahoney? Thank you very much, Ms. Jones.
Thank you.
Our last panel, Dr. Olson, from the University of Minnesota, Ms. Zhang from the Eastside Financial Center, and Ms. Friston from United Way. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed, Dr. Olson. Good to see you.
Chairman Dabney and members of the House Labor and Consumer Protection Committee. My name is Patricia Olson, and I am program leader with the University of Minnesota Extension, and I'm here today to share with you the value I see in coalition building with my experiences as leader of the Minnesota SAVES Financial Literacy Network. As our last guest, our last speaker just attested to, can a task force make a difference? And I'm here because of my experience with Minnesota SAVES to say it sure can. The Minnesota SAVES Financial Literacy Network is a group made up of financial literacy and asset building representatives who provide direct service, education, and advocacy. I can attest to the value of diverse organizations meeting with a similar focus to create solutions for Minnesota residents. I have seen at discussions at Minnesota SAVES meeting where one organization shares a concern and another hears that concern and provides a solution. Eva just shared the example that I was going to share with accountability. We're at our meeting. Accountability shared, you know, participants that come to our organization are losing assets through rapid anticipation loans. At that meeting, a credit union said, I think I have a solution and I can help you. Together, we saw a solution formed right there in a task force type of setting. This is only one example of this type of interaction that happens at each meeting that we conduct. The Minnesota SAVES Financial Literacy Network works in a similar capacity to the Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force, but this new proposed task force would take networking and coalition to a level that's not currently reached by the network I currently co-facilitate. Creation of this task force will create the environment where a much broader spectrum of organizations will come to the table, including those who are so greatly needed, such as legislators, state representatives, representatives of state agencies, credit unions, banks, and the philanthropic community. This new unique form of agencies and individuals will provide that missing link to get the needed curriculum, education, and services to those who most need it. I especially look forward to the opportunity provided that those with personal financial education curriculum and classes to work closely side by side with bankers, credit unions, and other financial institutions who do provide the loans for homes, cars, and education. There are plenty of excellent financial literacy curriculum available. We really don't need money to create more. What we need is to create opportunities at the most crucial time of a consumer's life prior to the purchase or the loan closing to provide needed education to help Minnesota residents select loans that are asset building. They are investments, meaning that they are the least costly to them, and those consumers understand the terms and know that they can afford to pay back the loans. While at the same time, the business offering the loan will end up with a lender who knows they can afford it and that they will keep the asset in that institution and won't get that asset back. We need education and business in the context of quality policy to work closely together so Minnesota residents and the business both end up with the goal that they want in making that transaction. Providing the forum for organizations to get together to discuss creative solutions to issues and opportunities and provide quality financial literacy education when most needed will help Minnesota limited income families climb that ladder out of poverty. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Olson. Ms. Zhang.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the community. My name is Mei Zhang. I'm the director of the Eastside Financial Center with Youth and Social Services of Minnesota Financial Counseling. In 2007, we established a collaboration partnership with Thrivent Financial Solutions and U.S. Federal Credit Union to create the Eastside Financial Center. This financial center is one of its kind in terms of its unique collaboration across sectors to provide services, both affordable financial products and services, and education to the unbanked community of St. Paul. Accessing financial products is just the beginning for asset development. The lack of opportunities in wealth building has contributed to the high number of foreclosures and depleting investments from the community. Families need to learn how to manage their money through financial education and counseling, save more than money they earn, and prosper by accumulating and sustaining appreciable assets. Financial institutions seek to serve well-off or bankable individuals, that is, individuals that can easily access credit or opportunities to build or gain assets. This leaves a high percentage of the population without access to the financial mainstream. This unbanked population has turned to buy necessity to high-cost finance providers such as check cashing outlets, payday lenders, rent-to-own, and pawn shops to access their money. This, in fact, has positioned the unbanked population to be vulnerable to predatory financial practices. One of the common themes identified in working with these individuals and families is that they know exactly what they need to get out of poverty. They just don't know how to access those tools and who has those tools. One of our recent participants of the IDA program just purchased her house at the end of January 2009. She's a single mother of five and has never really even thought about home ownership because of her credit and debt issues. But through the IDA program and through working with the Eastside Financial Center, she made that possible. So her and her five kids are now living in a home on the west side of St. Paul. It still continuously is active in the community in terms of creating peer support groups to work with other families who can easily access the same kind of program. Through these asset building, families are now taking control of their own lives through development of financial management skills to help protect, sustain, and grow their assets both in the short and long term. When families feel that they are in control of their own finances, and even if there is a downward financial spiral, they can still recover. This is very important for families who are victims of predatory financial practices. Families who have gone down this dark path will have lost trust in relationships with financial institutions, and this needs to be reestablished in order to create assets and for them to start looking at ways to leave poverty. The EFC seeks to rebuild these trust and relationships in order to help families who are unbanked and even low-income families who are working in their recycling door-to-door phase and leave that behind in order to start moving forward. But being unbanked or having limited access to mainstream financial products and services, families will not be able to create or build assets to move them forward. Through asset building opportunities, families will be able to purchase homes, start businesses, and return to school. This in turn contributes to community revitalization and development, and thus creating a healthy and more sustainable community. Mutual Social Services fully supports this house file number 2062. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Ms. Christian, good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Like all of you who are considering this bill, Greater Twin Cities United Way is committed to reducing poverty and the underlying causes to our agenda for lasting change. The recommendations laid out for the Lateral to Poverty Task Force align with the work Greater Twin Cities United Way is currently doing to improve financial stability for low-income people. Our current strategies include FAME, the statewide IDA program, partnering in Claimant, a statewide partnership to increase capacity and utilization of free tax preparation services and earned income tax credit and working family credit, investing in building capacity of job training programs across the metro area, and then convening nonprofits, financial institutions, and faith communities to find collaborative, sustainable strategies for increasing use of financial education and mainstream financial services. The United Way would be interested in serving on this task force. We recognize that to achieve impact at scale, we must work strategically across sectors. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Representative Lanning. Closing words, thoughts, wisdom?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I want to thank all of the folks who came forward to show their support for this piece of legislation and to tell the story. And you got a sample of what we heard as we went around the state of Minnesota talking with people who experienced poverty, talking with people who are trying to help and be advocates for those who are experiencing poverty. And we think with this commission report that we've got a framework, we've got a blueprint for how Minnesota can achieve a goal of eliminating poverty by the year 2020. It's a good study. It's a good report. But let's not let it sit on the shelf, because unless we take action to implement the recommendations that are in that report, we've gone through this exercise to no avail, and we've let people down. I'm very impressed with the level of interest that there is around the state and the work of the commission, and the spirit that there is with which people are trying to help each other, to help their neighbors. I refer you to this other handout that we had that summarizes the recommendations of the commission. If you look on that page 28, it's down at the bottom, challenge 3, this is one of the key recommendations of our commission. To become fully self-sufficient financially, Minnesotans must be able to move beyond mere survival to the point where they are building and maintaining assets. That means that their already inadequate resources must not be further depleted through predatory financial practices, and greater financial literacy is needed to reduce vulnerability to such practices. We're not going to be able to eliminate poverty in this state. We're not going to be able to help people move out of poverty unless we're able to do a better job of helping people build assets, to avoid predatory lending practices, to put an end to that, and to improve financial literacy. One of the things that we clearly saw as we went around the state is that a lack many times of people having just a basic understanding of the importance of having a banking relationship, having the kind of financial understanding that's going to be necessary in order to build those assets. The key for eliminating poverty is really related to helping people build assets, to have the kind of financial understanding that they need to avoid being taken advantage of, to be able to start building assets along the way. And one of the other things I might say with regard to recommendations, so much of what's in our report can be implemented without millions and millions of dollars. We don't make a very big investment already in the same program. It wouldn't take a whole lot more to add many, many more people to be served by that program that's clearly produced a lot of results. So as we consider legislative initiatives, I would hope that we would place a high priority on those things that really help us achieve this goal and don't necessarily cost the state a fortune in order to really help people. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate your willingness to come here this morning after a very, very late night, and I'm glad I didn't fall asleep, but so thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Representative Simon. Thank you, Mr. Scheer, and Representative Lenning, thank you for your work on all of this. It sounds like you put in a lot of time and gave it a lot of your attention. I think we all appreciate your hard work and really respect it, and you. I have a few questions that are suitable either for you or any of the people who are on the panel, but I guess I'll address them to you, and if someone really wants to chime in, they can, or if you wanted to defer to them. First of all, I'm wondering, you just mentioned financial literacy, and I know from time to time, not this year, because we don't want to keep more mandates on districts, from time to time we've talked, though, about financial literacy, some sort of mandate, I suppose. To what extent do you think some of these issues stem from a lack of formal education, and whether or not a mandate is the answer, whether it's just a school district by school district decision, regardless of what we tell them to do, do you think there should be, regardless of how it comes about, more kind of financial education in our schools?
Mm-hmm. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Simon. We're in an era right now that all of us are loath to more mandates
right.
being placed on schools or local units of government or whatever. But very frankly, we're not doing the job in formal education with regard to financial literacy. We're not. I think you see isolated examples of where some good things are being done in communities around the state, but it's hit and miss. And I don't know what the real ultimate answer would be, but we need to place a higher priority on doing everything we can to encourage financial literacy, and maybe providing incentives to school districts instead of the stick approach, maybe some carrot approach for school districts to take an active role in trying to improve financial literacy. But it's shocking, frankly, to see, and that's why predatory lending has been so successful, is that that people don't have the basic understanding of what it means to have a banking relationship and how they can avoid being taken advantage of. And so they get taken advantage of with payday lending with exorbitant interest rates. And I think this needs to be a much higher priority with our state government in terms of everything we can do to advance the financial literacy.
Representative Simon,
a follow-up. Thank you. And Representative Lanning, thanks for that. I appreciate it. And another question I had just for you is, in your observation, to what extent do you think that part of the challenge is a lack of awareness of present resources? I'm not saying that we shouldn't provide extra resources, but to what extent is it that just there are folks out there who could avail themselves of the services of some of the people we saw here today, but just don't know that they exist?
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simon, that's another important part of the problem here, is that there are tremendous resources already in existence out there, but oftentimes people are not aware, and they're not able to work their way through and identify all the places where they might receive some help. And so I'm a firm believer that those who are providing assistance along the way need to form coalitions, cooperatives, where they're sharing information with each other, making referrals to each other. And I think that should really be done on a community or county basis, where you get all the providers in a community or a county that come together, share information with each other, and try to make sure that they're making referrals, that they're helping people work their way through the maze of all the different services that might be available out there. Community action agencies, I think, already are a very good model in helping to achieve that, but I think we need more of that kind of approach to help people identify the resources and find their way to the resources that are available.
Representative Simon.
Sorry, I won't monopolize. This is it. the final question I had is, is there any jurisdiction out there, whether it's another state or a county or a city or whatever, that you or the commission looked at that you could say, we want to be like them? Or is it not so much that copycatting and that we just need to figure out what's best to do regardless of who else is doing it? I'm just wondering whether there's another place out there that you look to say they're doing it right or they're doing it well or at least better than we are.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Simon. Let me give an example of something that is happening in different parts of the state that I would really like to see expanded all over the state, and that's an effort called Circles of Support. We were particularly impressed with what's happening up in the Grand Rapids area, down in the Jackson area in southwest Minnesota. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I'd like to see Circles of Support encouraged all over the state. What it is that you get people in the community that get connected with those who are experiencing poverty, trying to help them identify the resources, helping them, advising them, mentoring them with regard to what they need to do to be able to work their way out of poverty. It's a tremendous program, and we heard from people who are living in poverty and how they felt that the Circles of Support concept helped them immensely, and the people who are providing that help, volunteers from the community, who are stepping forward saying, I'd like to work with, mentor someone who is trying to work their way out of poverty. This is not a high-cost item. This is one of those things that can be done without a huge investment, but it pays tremendous dividends, and not only for those who are living in poverty, but to hear the people who are serving as mentors talk about their personal satisfaction and experience that they had is most impressive. And it wouldn't take a whole lot for us as a state to provide some additional incentives and encouragement for circles of support to be in every community. I think it's something that should be in every community. And it's taking advantage of community assets to help people build their own individual assets. That's, I think, a good example of it.
Thank you. And that seems like a appropriate place to end. Thank you, Representative Lanning. The committee has a couple of quick moments of business. Representative Murdoch, how are the April 3rd minutes? They're just fine. Representative... moves the April 3rd minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Thank you to all the panelists who came today. I do appreciate it. This is our last meeting. I'd like to thank committee staff, Ms. Faust, the CLA, Ms. Murphy, the committee administrator, for keeping us in cookies and today in pastries. To Mr. Marsh on the GOP side, Mr. Sullivan for their service, to the members on the nonpartisan side, Mr. Pender and Ms. Newman, and to Mr. Burris today for pinch hitting for them. To Representative Murdoch, the GOP lead, to James, to Page, and to all the members for the opportunity to work here today and serve you as chair. Thank you all. With that, we are adjourned.